ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me, your host, Kurt Dillon, for this, another fantastic episode of Just Gone, the Veritas 7 true crime podcast that's dedicated to active, unsolved missing persons cases. Tonight, one of the most interesting and intriguing missing persons cases in recent history, the disappearance of Brandon Swanson. Tonight, we're going to get into his car, where it was left on the side of the Minnesota highway, all the theories, all the possibilities. We have a good ensemble group for you tonight that's going to get involved with you. So I want to quickly introduce my co-host, Danny Lott. Also, we have with us tonight Matt Sloniker, April Hill, Ellie Sherrill, Steph Clark, Dakota Bloyd, our resident coroner, and Jennifer Falk. Together with me, your host, we're going to bring this case to you and hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. We're going to talk about the disappearance of Brandon Swanson. So you don't want to miss it. Matt, I know you, Danny, did a lot of research on this, so I'm going to let you guys drive this a little bit so you know your work paid off.
Sure, I'll just kind of lay it out and tell you where we're at. Brandon is a 19-year-old kid. He's a college kid. It's 2008. He's lived his whole life in southwest Minnesota, and I've been there. It's a farming area, real rural. This kid spent his whole life in this area. He knew the area well. He was at a little party with his college friends. He had a couple drinks. He wasn't drunk. They said visually he looked fine. He left around midnight. At about 2 a.m., he calls his parents and says, "Hey, my car's stuck in a ditch. I should be about right here." You know, he should have known the area. And his parents say, "Okay, don't sweat it. We're on our way." And his parents remain in contact with him while they were trying to get to him. And they kind of got there and he wasn't there, so they were still looking and driving, and he had told them, "Go back to where I was and kind of backtrack my route," and they couldn't find him, and they were on the phone like 47 minutes with him, and the calls had dropped a few times, so they'd have to recall, and he said, "Hey, I see some lights. I'm going to head towards these lights," and a little bit later, they're talking to him, still looking for him, and he says, "Oh, shit." And the phone goes dead, and they never found him. The next morning, through cell records, they bounced him off a tower, and he was 25 miles from where he thought he was. So it's just kind of weird to me that a kid that's lived his whole life here went completely the opposite direction home. His car was stuck. It was down a dirt road, which was weird. But they couldn't get any footprints. They didn't find anything. No one had seen him. Absolutely nothing at all. It's like he vanished into thin air.
Wow. That's some case.
Yeah.
That's almost Ellie. like a Twilight Zone kind of thing where it's like he kind of warped to another area or whatever.
Yep. Just gone. And they thought maybe he went into a creek and cause he had mentioned something about hearing running water. But I guess there was a creek nearby and they extensively went through it and said, "Yeah, he's not in the creek." Ellie, Danny, you guys got anything else?
Well, there's a bunch of theories. And that's, I think, one of the things that we can explore tonight is all the different theories, because, you know, on one hand, the river was ruled out because they said he never washed up down the river. But I also think it's odd because they did have dogs come out there and they say that the dogs had caught a scent that had maybe said that he had crossed the river once or twice, that they had picked up a scent that he had crossed this small creek or river. So that's also interesting to look into. And also odd that his cell phone was never recovered. And the car doors were open and the keys were missing. So not only is he missing, the cell phone he was on that went silent and the keys to the car, everything gone and the doors were open.
Wow. So what makes you think he says, "Oh shit"? Do you think he fell down into a creek bank? Because when I read that, my first thought was somebody hit him with a car. He saw a car coming around a corner and he was in the middle of the road. Boom.
So the phone was still on when he said, oh shit. When they did an interview with the parents, they said the phone didn't hang up immediately when he said that. Like, it was still on, and they just kept saying his name over and over. And so they feel like if there was foul play, they would have heard it in the background. If there was water, it kind of takes away that theory. And then they finally hung up and then called back again, thinking maybe he would see the light, and he dropped his phone. So that was some of the quotes from the parents. So this is why it gets even more convoluted.
Yeah, Danny, what do you think?
Somebody had mentioned there was an article on Reddit where people were kind of typing in all their different theories and ideas. And there was ideas as far-fetched as he fell in a sinkhole. There was ideas, you know, everybody kind of was just trying to figure out how, you know, if his body wasn't recovered from the small creek or river, and there's just no evidence that there was any foul play as so far. Like, somebody had mentioned that. They're like, well, maybe he literally fell into like a sinkhole. I mean, it's not unrealistic to say that that's not possible, but then was there a sinkhole? I mean, like, I'm so curious as to, like, you know, what did they discover that whole area all these years later?
Okay, so what I was saying was, okay, so one of the theories that I kind of have is that, you know, if his phone, possibly it could have taken it like a couple of minutes or something for it to completely shut off. Like, maybe if he fell into the river, you know, they might not have heard anything, but that could be his phone just, you know, it was 2008. Those phones went through a lot. They could handle a lot. So it, you know, his phone could have very well have taken a few minutes to shut off. I think that they weren't hearing anything because the sound was already gone at that point if he had fallen into the water. And, you know, it was 40 degrees that night. So even though it was May, it's Minnesota, so it was 40 degrees. And so it's very possible for me that he could have fallen into the river, but then he got out and, you know, crossed to the other side. He very well could have passed out somewhere to the, you know, he could have had hypothermia and passed out somewhere and just have given into it. And something else that they had mentioned was that the wheat fields were very, very tall at that point, and that made it difficult to search. And there were a lot of farmer lands around, and it was crop season. And so they didn't want, they didn't allow the police to search their properties because of that. They didn't want anything messing with their crops. And so I think that it's very, very possible that he could have passed out in one of the fields, and the next morning, because they didn't start searching for him until after 6:30. So I think it's very possible that there could have been farm equipment that could have ran him over, and they wouldn't have even known about it.
I think that's a really good theory. I didn't know any of those details, but, you know, that would kind of like make the most sense out of everything, being that he didn't wash up down the river. And they didn't really think of foul play, and all of his items were missing because they were probably on his possession. But, you know, maybe we didn't, maybe you could answer that, Kurt, better as far as technology and pinging locations in 2008. So that's one question I want to ask you guys. And then the other question was, Matt, did they mention, you said that his friend said he wasn't drunk, but did they say how many drinks he had? I think you said three, but I mean, can they really base, I mean, obviously he was confused about where he was locality wise, you know, maybe he was more buzzed than they assumed.
So I saw a few things about it. His friends said he had a few drinks, 2 to 3. He did not look visually impaired. And his parents said that the whole time they were talking to him, he didn't sound like he was inebriated in any way. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't really know that we can say that he was so drunk he just got lost and didn't know where the hell he was. I think he was probably within his normal functioning abilities.
This reminds me of another case where a very similar kind of circumstance, except for the fact that it was in the middle of a blizzard. And it was either in Wisconsin or I'm pretty sure it was in Minnesota also. But there was a guy who was relatively young. He was he was older than Brandon, but he was pretty young. He got lost in a snowstorm. The car skid off an embankment. He couldn't get any traction, and he was stuck on the side of the road. And he called I don't know if it was his parents or it was his wife or his best friend, like his brother or something like that. And the same thing. They were talking on the phone for like an hour, and he's telling them, I'm at a barn. I'm at this. They could not isolate where he was. They were looking for him frantically, but it was the middle of a blizzard or whatever the case may be. And ultimately, the guy ended up, he had actually left his girlfriend in the car. The car ran out of gas. That's what it was. The car ran out of gas in the middle of a blizzard. He left his girlfriend in the car with their kid. And he went to go try and get help, but he got disoriented and he got lost, and he was walking and walking. He's on the phone and he's telling his family, he's like, I'm at a barn. I'm here. I'm on this road. I'm at whatever. And pretty much the same scenario, only they found his body. But he walked around and he got hypothermia and he got hypoxia and he started losing it. Like, he's on the phone with his family and he started not making any sense. And he started talking like really weird and like, the, you know, they're coming to get me, like saying weird things until he just finally stopped responding altogether. So there is something, it's not without precedent, that when you're walking around and you're exposed to the elements, I don't know if 40 is quite cold enough to do it. It might certainly be cold enough to do it if he did fall into the river and get soaking wet, because especially if there's a little bit of wind and you're wet, might as well be 20.
I'm looking at this river on Google Maps right now.
Right.
And it's about 6 feet wide and maybe about 8 inches deep. So
okay.
It's not the Mississippi.
They said that it was at 15 feet at the time of his disappearance.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not the Mississippi River, so.
Right, right, right. All right. So it's more, it's right, more like
he can't go floating feet down a river if it's like, like, you can't float if it's that small and shallow.
Yeah,
right?
It's not even, it's not enough to submerge, 8 inches or whatever. It's not even enough to submerge your body.
No, that's like, we call it, we call that a creek.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even right. A creek. Yeah.
Depending
but
upon
I really,
where you live in the country, it's a brook or a creek or a creek or a, or yeah, a, you know, something.
Yeah, but I just, I had no idea, Danny, that information you shared. I hadn't seen that, but I keep sitting here while you guys are talking, and my brain now is just defaulting to the fact of the farm field and that the farmers wouldn't let them search. And when you said farm equipment and him, you know, in those wheat fields down low and that farm equipment coming through, I mean, gosh, that actually seems really the most plausible out of all scenarios.
And, you know, as far as like his clothes or whatever, if they would have found it, they probably just would have, you know, marked it up to typical trash, you know, the wind blows stuff in, whatever. It would, I mean, everything would have been tattered at that point if he had been run over with the farm equipment anyway.
So. Right. But still, it's just so crazy. Oh, that's what I was going to ask you, Kurt, or anyone have information as far as like, could you ping phone locations in 2008?
Yes. Yeah, you absolutely could.
That's the how issue, they found him.
What's that? Yeah. That's how they knew where he was ultimately. But the,
so he was supposed to leave Marshall and go southwest, and he thought he was in Lind, but he actually went northwest out of Marshall, and they pinged his phone towards Taunton and found his car on the county line road there.
But so that was the last ping, was where the car was, because that means that he couldn't have gone anywhere if the phone was with him. I'm
right. The thing is, when you're in a desolate place like that, in order to really triangulate accurately where you're at, that's why they call it triangulate, there needs to be, your phone needs to be pinging off of three towers simultaneously. And as long as your phone is pinging off of three towers simultaneously, they can pinpoint where you are to about 50 feet. The problem is, when you're in a remote area like that, there's not three towers there. So they would only be able to get a very general location, like within a half a mile of the tower that his cell phone was pinging off of, which when you're in the middle of the woods and there's lakes and rivers and all that other kind of shit, that's a pretty big search radius. You know what I mean?
Go ahead. I was just going to say something else that was reported, and I'm not sure where his glasses would have been, but they said that his parents said that he did not have his glasses on him. So I don't know if maybe he left them in the car or what, but he was legally blind.
Right.
So I found that interesting too. Like, he had no idea where he was. So that could have, you know, played a big part in why he ended up where he did. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they even said here, I'm reading a thing where the authorities said that he could be anywhere within a 122 square mile area.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Those fields were big.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get it. I am a little, I think it's a little weird that they found the doors to his car open.
Yeah, like, I thought that was weird too. Like, why would he be lost and then open up all his doors?
Right. The way I look at this, just, I got to put this out there. I understand that the people he was at the party with are saying that he wasn't intoxicated. His parents said he didn't seem like he was intoxicated in any way. Clearly, there's all the evidence in the case points to the fact that he was disoriented when he left the party. To the point where he left the party and he was driving in the opposite direction to home that he needed to drive in. For somebody that grew up in the area whatsoever, that means for whatever reason, doesn't necessarily mean he was drunk. Somebody might have slipped him a roofie. So all kinds of things. There could be all kinds of explanations. But whatever the reason was, he was disoriented in some manner.
He was either disoriented or, because this road was way off, from where he was going, he was going to meet someone there, right? Let's say he was going to go meet a girl or something in this location. Why else would he be so far from where he was supposed to be?
That's true. They never said that he was going home, did they?
But why would he call his parents and give him a different location? So, yeah, you're right, Kurt. I don't know.
It just, it doesn't seem like he was in his right mind. Whether that was accidental or whether that was as a result of some kind of chemical intoxication, we'll never know. But, clearly there's some element here. There's a piece of the puzzle that's missing, at least one, maybe a couple. It could be that he told everybody he was leaving and going home, and he really had a secret clandestine plan to go meet a girl somewhere, maybe to go meet a boy somewhere. Who knows? You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. So that might be the reason, if it was something like that, where he didn't want anybody to know where he was going, that he was lying to everybody, telling him he was going to go home or whatever, and he was going somewhere that he wasn't familiar with, which is why he got even more disoriented. Right. These are all things that are possible.
Yeah. I mean, also, there's been reports that there's, you know, a few old wells out in those fields. Especially if he was disoriented and it was dark, you know, there's a very good chance that he could have fallen down one of those wells somewhere and they just never found it.
All of that is possible. But when I look at the facts of the case, they take pains in this case to make sure that we know, first of all, that he said, oh, shit. So he saw something, whatever it was, it might have startled them, but it didn't take him by surprise. He saw it coming, whatever it was, before it got him. All right. That's number one. Number two, we know that the phone stayed on for a certain period of time after whatever it was got him. So if he went down an embankment, whatever the case may be, if he fell with the phone in his hand, his parents would have heard that. You can't tap your phone when you're on the phone with somebody without somebody knowing that your phone just got whacked or got tapped. We all hear that noise when we're on the phone with somebody, even when it taps it against your ear. Or whatever, a lot of times you hear that, you know, the tap of it against somebody's head. So the parents don't report any of that, but the phone stays on. We don't know how long it stayed on, but it stayed on. Okay. The fact that it stayed on lets me think that something occurred to him that made him drop the phone. It's not beyond the realm of belief that he couldn't find it again, depending upon what settings he had the phone on. Because, you know, if you're on screensaver mode or whatever, once you're talking for a couple of minutes on the phone, you have your phone set that it goes black so that you don't burn your battery with the screen being lit up. You know what I mean? You have it to turn the screen on for a couple seconds and then turn back off again. So it's very possible, if it wasn't a bright, like, moonlit night and he's in the middle of the woods, that he dropped the phone and just couldn't find it again. But I also dissuade that theory for the simple fact that would not stop him from calling out to his mother and his father. I know I just dropped my phone, even if I can't find it, I would say, hey, Dad, do me a favor, yell for a minute or two so like your voice can guide me to the phone. Because I know the phone's still got to be within audible range of me.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, I'm going with aliens, alien abduction.
Right, yeah.
That's so pretty much my conclusion of this.
Gotcha. I gotcha. And I'm a little bit more traditionalist in that. Not a bad hypothesis at all. But I'm going with he either met somebody in the woods, like a group, maybe like a bunch of kids that were just out raising hell or whatever, or like a bear? Plenty of bear.
I was thinking yeah. of a bear or a dog, but I felt like.
Well, a dog's not going to kill you right away.
But I felt like the mom who was talking to him would have heard the bear or would have heard a dog's. Like the guy in Alaska that got eaten by bears. They got that on audio where he's screaming and, you know, carrying right. on, and you can hear the bear. I felt like if it was a bear or a dog or an animal, the mom would have heard it.
Yeah.
That's possible unless he tried to run and drop the phone and couldn't immediately see the phone, but he didn't want to yell out because he was afraid that would incense the animal, whatever it was. So he knew he had to keep his mouth shut, hoping that the thing would just go away. And that doesn't even mean that the bear got him. Or the animal, whatever it was, coyote. I mean, pick an animal. It doesn't really matter. You probably even have bobcats back up in there and all kinds of other wild animals.
Are you able to see Matt on that map that you pulled up of where the creek and stuff was? Was his car right next to that creek, or was it next to Danny, those wheat fields? Like, I'm trying to get a visual of what he was near that could have caused a human to disappear without dogs being able to find them.
I got you. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
So he was in Marshall and was heading this way, called his parents and thought he was in Lind, right here.
Mm-hmm.
They found his car on County Line Road bouncing off a Taunton Tower right near this creek. He was 1 mile north, so I'd have to chart it. So his car was probably right up in this area. They found him 1 mile north of this road.
On a road, though? Was he on a road?
This is a dirt road. Okay. His car was on this dirt road, and this is the creek that they were checking. And I can satellite it. It's not very big at all.
No.
I mean, you can barely even tell that it's a river. Look, it's not even as wide as the road.
Danny, are those the wheat fields that you're talking about surrounding that road on both sides?
So when you go here, that's the road he went down. So this is what he's looking at all the way around him. You can see the curvature of the earth out there.
Oh. Huh.
So he's down this road.
I guess it just depends on how far he went.
He's 1 mile down a dirt road. Google didn't run down that road, so I can't see it, but that he's down in there. But it's possible. I mean, I would have walked down the road. He thought he saw lights, but if he ended up in that field, froze to death, Danny's right. They couldn't come through there with a combine, and it would have chewed his ass up.
But they brought.
I mean, definitely they could have. But the thing that I'm noticing, like, there's houses everywhere.
Yeah, and they brought dogs out there. I mean, that's
like he's not in a desolate. If you're in trouble and your car is stuck or whatever, you're gonna go knock on somebody's door, no?
But were those houses there in 2008?
Right, 2008. It's hard to say. We'd have to go and look at the plots and see what year those houses were built.
They didn't look particularly new.
No,
they looked like perplexed. 60s and 70s era houses.
I'm perplexed.
I mean,
he was pretty close to this. So he's between this group of houses. His car was probably right in here somewhere. So you got a group of houses here, and you got a group of houses here. So he's between these two houses.
Right.
And out there, as flat as that is, you can see those lights. It's not like it's over a hill and you can't see it. You're going to be able to see that light.
That's what I'm saying. There is something. He is incapacitated in some way. Now, again, his friends and his father might not want to make it look like this was his own fault. They don't want to take away the sympathy or whatever. I'm not saying that's absolutely the case. But clearly, this kid was incapacitated in some way. Because a normal 19-year-old kid that grew up in this area is not going to be that freaking disoriented. It would be different if it was snowing and everything was white and you couldn't make out the topography. But it wasn't.
And no evidence showed when he's like, let's just say he's walking down a road and he's like, oh shit, in a car, he saw lights and the car hits him. There was no evidence of blood splatter or anything like that.
Nothing. They couldn't get any footprints. They didn't even know which direction he started walking.
No car tracks. So
well, not only that, if he got hit by a car, the phone would have went flying. His parents would have heard that. There's no way he gets hit by a car that doesn't make any noise.
And he's going to see those headlights for a long ways.
Yes.
Exactly. So somebody, maybe somebody came up on him and then they took him?
That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe he was killed for trespassing.
Now that I see the topography, I don't even think it was a bear. That's too wide open for a bear.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a river, and I think somebody came up on him and took him, honestly. And that's why there's hide nor hair of him. They took everything.
It's about the only thing that could have happened.
Yeah, look at that.
It really is. There's no place to hide.
How do you disappear in that?
Yeah, and they
did all kinds of aerial searches and all. So I think he had to be pulled from the area.
Yeah, he was abducted and taken somewhere, and that's, you know.
Well, and clearly whoever it was went and went through his car, too. Because you're not going to leave, just because your car loses traction and goes off into a ditch, you're not going to leave your doors open and let your battery die because you left the doors open, you know, with the light on in the car and just walk away, especially with all the doors open.
Yeah, they took evidence. They took whatever they could. They went through the car and they knocked him out and he's gone, which is plot. I mean, look at Dugard. How long was she missing for? Or Elizabeth Smart, how long was she missing?
9 months. Elizabeth Smart was missing for 9 months.
And there was,
ever dust for prints? Do we even know that?
I'm curious for that too.
Well, I'm sure they did, but obviously his prints are going to be, you're talking about if they found anybody else's prints in the car.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope they did, but we don't know. That's another one of those things, you know, if we put in a FOIA on it, and try to see. All the reports that I've read is that the authorities on this case keep saying over and over and over again they see no evidence of foul play. Well, I don't know how you can't not see evidence of foul play.
Exactly, because there's no evidence that he disappeared naturally.
Yeah. If he killed himself, there'd be a body.
Right.
You know what I mean? If he was killed by an animal, there would be some trace. There would be blood. There would be whatever. They said that it wasn't until about 1 or 2 the next afternoon that his phone stopped ringing and started going straight to voicemail.
So that just shows that the battery died.
Right. It probably only died because his parents were blowing it up. You know what I mean? They're probably calling it every 10 seconds, which obviously is going to make the battery die relatively quick. If they were smart, they would have, you know, if he didn't answer the first 8 times you called, he's not going to answer anymore after that. So don't kill the battery. Leave it on so that the cops can track the phone.
So they did an extensive search. The crops that were planted were harvested in the fall. He disappeared probably somewhere. It was in May, I believe, right?
May.
Yeah. In the fall, they harvested the crops and they went through all the fields again and they didn't find anything. If he was in the field and the combine got a hold of him, they would have found clothes. Shredded them up.
Cell phones and keys and metal and
They pinged the phone to find out where he was, but they never found the phone. So that tells me that a long time after he disappeared, the phone was still in the same spot. So clearly he got separated from the phone. My question would be, did the phone remain in the same spot from the time he lost contact with his father shortly after saying, oh shit, at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever it was? Did the phone remain in the same spot between then and the time that they pinged it to go and find his car?
Well, Dakota's got a good point in the chat.
Yeah, Dakota, the phone signal was definitely poor because they had gotten disconnected several times in the 45, 47 minutes the parents were looking for him.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they say that there's no evidence of foul play, and I mean, there's really no evidence at all. But,
Dakota, you bring up a really great point there as far as the time. 2008, if you'll all remember, all right, we all had issues with roaming. Roaming was a big deal. Now it's not a big deal because all the carriers use each other's cell tower. Back in 2008, that wasn't the case, though. If you had AT&T or whatever, and you were by a Verizon tower, you were going to lose service. Now they have it set up in a network where all of the cell providers use each other's towers. They have agreements. So there is no roaming anymore. Not like that. Where it used to be, if you were using another company's towers, if they had an agreement, you had to pay for that. Unless you paid an extra amount. You all remember that?
Yeah, you'd get the roaming fees.
Right. You know, we don't have that anymore because of the agreements that they have with one another. But it was really a great point, Dakota, that you brought up, that he might have lost service if his carrier didn't have a tower in that area. His reception would have been spotty at best.
I feel like the biggest clue in all of this is just the simplicity of the fact that we have this. The only evidence we have is the conversation that existed with him saying, oh, shit, and with nothing in the background to back up why he said that. Right. So if he fell, you'd hear him be like, oh, you know, or yelling. If he went in water, the parents would be able to hear distress. Like, it was just, oh, shit. And then, according to them, radio silent, but the phone didn't hang up yet.
Right.
So what could cause, I mean, I think we have to look at that. What could cause that with no background noise?
Somebody sticking a gun in your face or a shotgun?
Exactly.
And putting their finger to their lips, telling you to hush and not say anything? Because if he went into water, again, back in the day, we got to keep it in perspective. In 2008, there was no such thing as a waterproof cell phone. So if he went into the water with the phone's going to die almost immediately.
And it wouldn't ring all the way into the next day.
Absolutely right. That thing is going to be gone in seconds.
So we could rule that out.
Right. I don't think water, that's another thing I read. Almost all the authorities want to think he fell into a body of water. Well, he might have fell into a body of water after he dropped the phone, but the phone didn't go in water.
And they were ruling that out anyways, too. They're like, no.
Right.
But hey, maybe something. The tracking of the scent, maybe the reason the dogs picked up the scent and tracked him back and forth across the river is because somebody maybe took a gun and said and walked him that way.
I think it could be one of the farmers, and that's why they didn't allow the police to search their property.
Yes. I agree. That's great. And we had a listener just write in and say that he's in one of the houses. I completely agree with you.
Me too.
I believe that somebody local found him, saw him, heard him talking on the phone while he was walking and tracked him. And then when they got him, they decided they were going to do something heinous to him. So they brought him into a house. He doesn't necessarily have to be in a house. There's going to be barns there. There's going to be sheds there. There's going to be all kinds of places that you can go and you can bring somebody that you know a lot better than they do, as long as you separated him from his phone.
Right. And plus, you know, it's really weird that these farmers would not, or like, you know, I don't know how many farmers it was technically. They just said that they didn't want them on their property. So, you know, it's weird that they wouldn't want to help
a kid,
a 19-year-old kid. Yeah. Yes.
It's, right. I feel like it's all kind of tying together. I mean, as we're talking about this, and I mean, it's just the most plausible. I agree with the caller that wrote in that he was in a house somewhere in that area.
Well, to add to that too, I'm looking at his height. He's only 5'6" and he's a real small build. So he's like 5'6", 120 pounds tops.
Yeah.
Easy to manipulate physically.
Yeah. And that would explain the crossing back and forth of the river once or twice that the dogs picked up. And then, you know, that person, like you said, Kirk, could have a gun to him and he's just cooperating. And that's why you don't hear anything. If you fall, you're going to moan or be like, oh my God, help, or something. There was just nothing.
Well, absolutely. And we just had another listener write in and say that, you know, they could understand why the farmers wouldn't want the cops searching their property because, you know, you could do irreparable damage to the crops, or at least damage that would last for a long period of time. And that is true. However, that's not true when it comes to searching their houses.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
If the cop, definitely the land, so I can see that, but, you know, not letting the cops into the house, that's a little bit different. You probably have something to hide. Now, it could be something completely unrelated to Brandon Swanson, especially back in that time frame. You had people that were experimenting with that hydro. Half the people had a dedicated bedroom in their house to growing pot. You know, and they had the whole thing set up with the ultraviolet lights and the aquariums and the fish tanks. So, I mean, I could definitely see somebody that had that thing going on, not wanting the cops to come and look in their house.
So did you guys read something that somebody wasn't letting them in their house?
Yeah, I did. I read it on several things.
Yeah.
But I agree with what you're saying, Kurt, because especially, you know, maybe they find somebody on their land and they are doing something like that. They see a kid on their land.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
maybe
it definitely, there's a reason why you don't want the cops searching your house, but it's not necessarily the reason that you got a dead guy in there or a hostage or whatever. You could just be involved in some other kind of illegal activity that you don't want the cops sticking their nose in, and you can't hide it real quick. So, I mean, that's right, possible. It's a possibility.
Yeah. But now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, like, you know, if somebody was doing that, which is a very big possibility, again, these are very open lands. You know, and they see a 19-year-old kid on their property. They wonder, why is a 19-year-old kid on their property? And they're, you know, growing weed.
Well, and at 2 a.m, they probably don't even know he's a kid, right? It's just
yeah,
a man.
3 a.m.
Right. 2 a.m. They probably at 19 years old wouldn't assume that he was 19. You can't tell. So there's just this person out there in the middle of the night.
Not to mention, if they're smoking that shit that they're growing, they're probably paranoid as all get out.
Right. He's disoriented.
You know what I mean? And they're thinking that this guy's coming to take their stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think he was taken for sure. That's the only thing.
Danny, did you have an address or a name or anything on the people that were listed as not wanting to be searched?
I'll see if I can find it. Give me 1 minute.
Yeah, it'd be real interesting, you know, be real interesting, especially after the kid's gone for a couple of days. You would think if it was legitimate, you know what I mean, and they just had like pot plants growing in the house or something like that, they would hide that shit and they would be like, okay, you know, come and look, because I want you to make sure that, you know, I don't have this kid in my house, but also I want to do whatever I can do to find the kid. It's one thing to cover up my illegal drug use. It's another thing that a 19-year-old kid is going to die. You know what I mean? Because I'm smoking pot. So I definitely want you to eliminate me from any suspicion so you could get on to trying to find this kid.
So if you guys can see my screen, his car was right in this area here.
Right.
There's a huge body of water right here.
Right.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
This is like 500 feet wide by 1,000 feet long.
Right.
Farmers are very
creative
people,
too. But they never mentioned
that. I didn't see this in anything either, but they could have concrete blocked his ass up, and he's in the bottom of that pond.
Well, I thought they said they went through all the local, all the nearby bodies of water, though.
I think they just,
I think they did.
I read somewhere where they went through something like 100-something bodies of water. I would imagine that one right next to where he went in, they had a look in there. I don't know if they put divers in there or not. Yeah. But one of the key interesting elements that I found in this, you know, is that the cadaver dogs did hit on a dead body.
Oh.
But they never found the body.
Did it say where the hit was?
In that area. They didn't say exactly where it was, but they absolutely said that when they brought in the cadaver dogs, that the cadaver dogs got a hit, but the authorities were never able to find the body.
Mm-hmm. I mean, any body that goes into water eventually is going to surface unless they're weighted down at some point. So I feel like the bodies of water are not. I think there's foul play.
Oh, and so everybody knows too. Brandon's law was resulted as after this case, because police in the area were reluctant, because he was an adult. Police were reluctant to take a missing persons report until a certain amount of time elapsed, and they started looking for him. They didn't start looking for Brandon until noon the next day. After all of this happened, and as a result of this, his parents lobbied and petitioned the Minnesota legislature to pass Brandon's law, which now requires law enforcement to take a missing persons report without delay after notification of someone missing under dangerous circumstances, no matter the age and no matter how long they've been missing. So that's actually a law that's on the books in Minnesota now called Brandon's Law.
Well, it's good that they did that because, you know, maybe if it wasn't delayed for so long, they might have had better clues to find this kiddo.
And they, let's see, where is it now?
A lot of places don't delay any longer. I've been a 911 operator in 2 different states, and there is no rule of having to wait 24 hours for anyone to file a missing persons report.
Here's some of the... right before he said, oh shit, he said, not another fence.
So he was climbing around on people's properties.
The weird thing is, like, did you see any fences in those pictures?
No, I did not.
I have to zoom in more, and maybe there was a fence then, but not now.
And he's talking about another fence, so like he negotiated like four of them. You know what I mean? Like that's just really weird.
Yeah, like what the heck? His car goes in a ditch, and now he's just wandering off the main road and going over fences.
These areas are real wide open. These people don't have fences.
So I'm going to read what this true crime report has to say, just to put it out there.
See, they don't even fence their yards.
That's what I'm saying. And meanwhile, he's on the phone talking about not another fence. As the river was searched and Brandon's body was never found, authorities believe he made it back out of the water and continued walking. However, he likely died of hypothermia as the temperature was just under 40 degrees that morning. They do not believe foul play was involved. They do report, however, that the search dogs...
I just saw a fence on that last picture. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Kurt. If you go back, Matt, to that last photo right before this one.
This little bitty one.
No, there was another one right there. Sorry, go ahead, Kurt.
That's fine.
Yeah, go back.
Where?
The next picture, go forward.
This way?
No, there was a fence and a picture of a people's... Right there. It looked to the right. There's a fence that goes around
that. I think there's a delay in the screen sharing. This little thing right here?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not really a fence.
I mean, who knows back then, right? Sorry, Kurt, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's fine. That's fine.
The photo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it too, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying to myself, particularly if I'm a 19-year-old kid now that I'm 52, I might bitch coming across that fence. But when I was 19, you know, so I don't know if that would really dissuade me too much as long as I was in my right frame of mind. But then again, it could have looked different back in 2008. I don't know when these photos were taken, if they were taken at that time or if they're more recent.
This one says August 23.
Okay, so this was just taken. This is like now. So, all right. The reports here also say that the search dogs also indicated there were human remains. They hit on human remains near Mud Creek, which is north of Porter. However, authorities never actually found any remains. The authorities said that Swanson could be anywhere within a 122-mile area. 10 years after Swanson vanished, Yellow Medicine County Sheriff Bill Flated said it's a huge area. If you take that immediate area where the car was and then the time frame when he was walking on the phone with his parents, who knows what direction and went and how far he traveled. Volunteer firefighter Darren E. Delzer said he has another theory about what happened to Swanson based on several things he noted about the case. In response to an article by Angelo Marcos, Delzer said Swanson was legally blind in his left eye and always wore glasses. However, on the morning he went missing, he left his glasses inside his car. So they found the glasses in the car. Delzer also noted that Swanson said, "Not another fence," right before saying, "Oh shit." Delzer suggested the teen may have fallen into an unmarked cistern or well, which are not uncommon in rural areas.
But did they find a cistern or a well in that area?
They're not saying it, but another theory that they're projecting is that he may have just orchestrated his own disappearance.
But they said he was pretty mentally healthy with no past history of anything like that. But you never know what could have happened at that party.
Yeah.
The area that you described where they hit on a corpse is probably 5 to 7 miles away.
It's called, did you get what it was called?
Yeah, the road north of Porter where it hits Mud Creek.
Mud Creek just north of Porter, right?
Yeah. It's probably 7 miles away.
Whoa.
All right, but now here's the thing. Okay, something is wrong here again. Okay, let's go back to physics. Where the car, you're talking about 7 miles away from the car, right?
Correct.
Okay, there's no way he did that in 45 minutes, even if he was running.
Correct.
He was on the phone with his parents for 47 minutes and change. Especially at night on a dark road with no street lights or whatever. There was absolutely no way he traversed 7 miles on foot by himself in 47 minutes.
So he could have been abducted by gunpoint, taken somewhere, and then killed, and then dumped what was left of him or buried, and they just weren't able to find him.
This kid met somebody. There was somebody else there. I don't think somebody just came up on him either. I think he met somebody. Somebody told him to come out there and they were going to meet him. He didn't know the area, so he went too far off the road and lost traction by going into the ditch. And whoever it was that he met is responsible for his disappearance. And we're just clearly never going to know who that is. But he rode in a car. No doubt in my mind whatsoever, he rode in a car to get to where he was. If that's where he was and they hit on the smelly human remains 7 miles away from where his car was, there's no way he did that on foot. No way. Absolutely impossible. I mean, if he was full sprint running, he could have done it. But then again, his parents would know he was running. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be talking calmly on the phone with your dad talking about, oh, no, not another fence. You know what I'm saying? While you're sprinting.
Danny, what were you going to say?
Okay, so I'm trying to find more about this to, you know, double check it, but I'm reading this right now and it says that the canines picked up on Brandon's scent on a piece of farm equipment nearby, but the farmer to whom it belonged refused to let authorities search his property.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
He was fed to the pigs.
At what point do you get a warrant?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm sitting there and I'm like, if that's not probable cause, I mean, it's probable cause for them to search your car on the side of the road. It's probably when a dog or a canine hits on remains, on drugs, on whatever, that's probable cause for a warrant all day, every day, in all 50 states.
Yep. Somebody's protecting someone.
Absolutely. Did it give an address or a name, Danny?
No, it didn't, but I'm looking.
Now, that's a FOIA search right there. That's a FOIA request all day long.
100%. And so how can they sit here and say that there's no foul play when she just pulled that up and they picked up his scent on farm equipment? That
you're intentionally covering for somebody. The only way that's not a cover-up is if the article that says that they found the hit on farm equipment, if that's inaccurate, if somebody made that up. If that's an accurate statement and it could be verified by another source, whether it be in some cop's notes, this is what FOIA is for. If we can corroborate that statement with some cop's notes or some cop's report that he filed where it shows that the dog hit, and then he made contact with the property owner and the property owner denied them access, that's corroboration. When you have corroboration, that's a search warrant. Failure to even ask for a search warrant is malfeasance. That's either incompetence or you're covering up for somebody. Like the farmer is, you know, or whatever, the farmer's daughter is dating your son, or there's something going on like that where there's some backwoods connection between the investigator on the case and the person that owns that property.
I think that the case, we need to reopen this case and get this information and try to bring some closure to this family and let internet sleuths do their job.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Look more into the farmer thing and see what I can find about that.
We got to start hitting. I'm not too up to date. I've only FOIA requested Minnesota authorities a couple of times. So I've got to look up and get the documents and hit them with another thing. But it's going to be really interesting.
So you're going to have Lincoln County, Minnesota, and Lyon County, Lyon.
Okay.
County.
Make notes of that for me, please. I just don't have anything with me right now to notate that.
The road that he was on was like the county line road.
Right. We'll hit both. That's no problem. Is there anywhere that anybody sees where it mentions one of the investigating officers' names? Or is there any kind of thing like if you have any information about this case, contact any of that? Because that'll give us a hint on who specifically to ask for their notes. This is where it gets
Sheriff Bill Flatten.
Okay. Make a note of that, too, please, somebody.
Bill Flatten. Okay.
All right. He's the one that made, well, we'll find out. But, yeah, we want to find out who it was that made contact with that property owner. And hopefully, in the FOIA, they won't redact it. The property owner's name and address will be in the FOIA. Probably won't. They usually redact that kind of stuff. But we'll see. Maybe we get lucky and somebody gets lazy.
Okay, so this says, Yellow Medicine County Sheriff Bill Flatten worked with emergency support services on requesting landowner permission, helping to create an access schedule for the farmland so that investigators and search teams could work around the planting and harvest seasons. The problem, he said, usually arises when law enforcement doesn't have probable cause, although most property owners try to be accommodating.
It's because they left this off as a disappearance down a river or whatever, and
just the entire county of Lincoln County has a population of 5,000 people.
Oh yeah, this is
the whole county.
And that's not the county he resided in, correct? He was far away from home, or was it? Was that his home county?
No, he lived in the other direction. He was 25 miles from where he was supposed to be, or where he thought he was, and that was still, I mean, it took his parents another half an hour to get there from where, so he was pretty far away from where he lived.
Where was that party? Does it say where he was at the party?
The party was in Marshall at the Marshall college and in Canby.
And so is this in between where he was at the party and where his house was, or is this the opposite way you were saying?
I believe it's the opposite way. That's what I got out of it.
Because he lived.
See, now here, this article that I'm reading now says that this is why it's so important for these journalists, and I use that term very loosely, it's really important for them to check their facts before they write this stuff. Because here it says over a 3-week period, searching cadaver dogs found nothing.
Hmm.
I think we need to FOIA.
Yeah.
Yep.
It does say that Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension took over as lead agency on the case in 2010.
Wow. In late 2008, Emergency Support Services, a search and rescue organization based out of Minneapolis, identified 140 square mile area of interest to focus their search there. However, some farmers refused to allow search canines onto their land, particularly during planting and harvest season, leaving significant geographic holes in the search for Swanson. And the issue persists to this day. So he's buried. Somebody's using him for fertilizer.
Yep. And I don't know, after all these years and they're still refusing, I don't know why that wouldn't be probable cause.
Dakota's posting in the chat information to some of these, the Bureau.
Awesome. All right. Great.
Oh, cool.
That's fantastic, Dakota. Thank you. Sheriff Chad Meester, Lincoln, Minnesota, right? Okay. There's his email. Beautiful. All right, we have all of that. That's in there. That's good. Yeah, that's definitely worth a phone call.
Damn, Dakota, I need you to give me the sheriff's information from the Tarek Calico case, the Riviera guy.
Oh, yeah, right?
There's a former sheriff from that county in Tarek Calico's case. His name was
Riviera. Isn't he dead now? I think he's dead now, isn't he?
No, he was still alive. Remember, I was looking his stuff up.
Okay.
But I never could get a definite email or phone number for him.
I really want to see Gina's take on this.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those cases that we are going to have to dig into just for the benefit of the family and for really everybody who's been trying to find this kiddo for so long.
Right.
Well, and here's confirmation. Swanson's mother was also doubtful her son drowned, according to CNN, as one of the tracking canines had followed Swanson's scent from his car down a long gravel track toward an abandoned farm. The 3-mile-long trail also led to the river, where initially the cadaver dog jumped into the water and then jumped back out again, and continued tracking along another gravel trail until it, too, lost Swanson's scent. So the dog absolutely did pick up on his scent.
Yep, that's what they said, that the dogs picked up on his scent, and that it looked like he had crossed that river once or at least twice.
It seems unlikely that Swanson would have staged his own disappearance, as he'd been trying to meet up with his parents that night. One theory also suggests that he experienced a mental breakdown or had died by suicide. But his parents said that during their last phone call with him, Swanson had sounded coherent and did not seem to be impaired.
And now we got to figure out what gravel road that was on, because that would be where somebody spotted him and then took him.
I'm looking at it right here. Let me share a screen with you.
And he said not another fence right before that.
Yep, right before he said, oh shit, that's the gravel road.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at the entrance of it from the highway. Google didn't go down it.
So, field trip to Minnesota?
Right.
Yep.
Farmers are smart, man. They have equipment that...
And in 2021, that river dried up and is no longer there. As a result of a drought, law enforcement carried out an excavation that produced nothing.
Yeah, he's not in that river. He was in someone's house, and then they got rid of him.
To date, no physical evidence related to Brandon Swanson has been recovered, including his cell phone, car keys, or clothing. And all his parents have left are memories and that last chilling phone call.
Oh, my gosh. That is terrible not to have that.
Yeah, I just think that if it wasn't foul play, they would have found something.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Especially with the dogs picking up on
Yeah, you don't accidentally, that's one thing that a lot of these things, you know, overlook. You don't accidentally disappear without a trace. When you disappear by accident, there's evidence of it.
Oh, he was a good looking kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, these farmers had probably had people breaking into their shit and saw this kid running around and he disappeared.
Yep.
Yeah, that's sad. That's really sad.
I wonder, the reason he didn't have his glasses is because his car went into a ditch and he couldn't get back into the car to retrieve the glasses because the car was angled.
The one thing that I read was that it didn't really go into a ditch. He kind of got off on the side and his car was kind of high centered a little bit and the tire was spinning. There was no damage on the car. So it wasn't like he crashed into a ditch.
Right.
It was he just kind of pulled off a little bit and got
like
stuck.
He pulled off on the side of the road next to another car because that he was going to meet somebody. When you do one of those, let's meet on the side of the road and pull over here. You pull over next to each other. He just went a little too far. I could see where he wanted to take his glasses off to get out and try and push the car.
Sorry, Stephanie. It's because I read this too, but it's because he disappeared next to a major highway.
VICAP is that's the violent criminal apprehension program. So, I mean,
right.
That is weird that if they didn't suspect foul play, VICAP would be involved in any way.
Right. I read that in some states they have to do that if they do disappear next to a major highway or something. I did look into that.
Okay. Yeah, that's possible too, because in order to enter his DNA into CODIS, they might have to do that through VICAP, because I think CODIS and VICAP are part of the same kind of program.
Right.
I don't think he disappeared on his own. And I definitely think it's foul play. Honestly, it strikes me as he was trying to dip his wick in the wrong candle and somebody got pissed off about that and got feelings.
I thought that too, but why would he call his parents and tell him he was 25 miles away?
Yeah, I'm wondering that too.
I think he was disoriented.
Secretive. He wouldn't want his parents.
I think he realized when he met with somebody, he drove to that spot. This is what I'm thinking in my mind. I could be totally wrong. It could just be me making up a plot and a story or whatever the case may be. But it looks to me by the evidence that he drove there to meet somebody. He met somebody, maybe had a drink or whatever the case may be, and they slipped him a roofie. They drugged him in some way that he was incoherent. Maybe he fell asleep. Maybe he passed out for a couple minutes. They put him in a car. They drove him 7 miles away and opened up the door and let him out. I don't know, but there had to be a reason how he got 7 miles away. And clearly, like I said, this kid was incoherent. He's not going to walk away from the car 7 miles without putting his glasses on. Nobody's going to do that. I wear my glasses. I'm not going 5 feet. I'm not going to the bathroom without putting my glasses on. Just force a habit. I don't need my glasses to go to the bathroom. I'm not getting up off my desk or getting out of my bed without putting my glasses on. Just not.
Well, and that's odd because if he was that blind, he would have had to have worn them while he was driving. So that means he took them off.
Right. Yeah. We got here that after the party he went met someone. I believe that. I really believe that. I believe he went to go meet somebody. He met somebody at the party or whatever the case may be and went to go meet him for a little one-on-one time, and something twisted happened. We could only guess what that is. Whether the person had evil intentions when he met them or what. Like I said, listen, this is a 19-year-old kid. He's a good-looking kid. He's living in the middle of Minnesota. Here's a scenario. What if he's in the closet? What if he's having feelings and he met a dude and he wanted to explore those feelings and he didn't want anybody to know about it or whatever, and the guy had bad intentions?
Did anybody mention seeing if they saw him leave the party alone, or what if he gave someone a ride? Why the doors would all be open? Do you think maybe he didn't leave by himself but nobody saw him leave? Or do you have that information?
I just didn't read anything that gave me any indication that he left with other people, whether they were in the same vehicle or not. They just made it like he left. They also mention, though, that before he called his parents, he tried calling three of his friends. He tried calling three different friends and nobody could help him or nobody answered. His parents were the fourth resort. So they know that tracked his calls. So he called three different friends first for help. Once you realize that his parents were not the first option or the second option or the third option, that also leads you to believe he knew calling them, they were going to ask questions that he wasn't prepared to answer. Like, what were you doing out here in the middle of nowhere telling me that you're here or whatever the case may be? It seems to me like, you know, he went to go meet up with somebody for a tryst and it went south.
This case was so solvable. Subpoenas and warrants on the farmer's land and the cell tower that's there. There, you saw how rural it is. There's not 100 cell phones, not 100 cell phones pinging that tower. Right. You could have went through what was on the tower that night.
Right.
And saw that it was a stranger from Marshall or whatever. I mean, there were so many things it looks like they overlooked in this.
Right.
And they had resources.
Absolutely. Well, and not only that, you 2008, you know what I'm saying? Like, phones became smartphones in like 2007. And not everybody had one. If you had a smartphone in 2008, you were the shit. You know what I mean? So it's like, it was a whole different era back then. Like, we don't know. This kid probably had some little cheap Nokia or Motorola flip phone that he was driving around with. He didn't have, like, Google and all the, you know, maps and all the stuff that we had now. Or he had a Motorola Razr or whatever. Those were the phones back then.
Okay, so I'm reading on the Have You Seen Us, his page on there. And it says that they've got huge amounts of scents on the farm field of Brandon. It says, more than I've ever searched. So we are really confident that he's somewhere in this watershed. We just can't get that final point.
Right.
So that's still weird. I still feel like one of those farmers is knows something.
Something. Because, I mean, why would he, you know, again, if you're in your right mind, if you're not disoriented and you're not groggy and you're not out of your gourd, incapacitated in some way, you're in a spot you don't know. You're going to get out of your car. You think you're 25 miles from where you're at. So that tells you you're disoriented already. And he wasn't lying to his parents. You're not going to have your parents get in the car and come to get you and tell them you're 25 miles from where you're at on purpose. So clearly he was not right. At that point, he was trying to not perpetrate the fraud. So he wanted, his intention was to get his parents to come to him. Clearly. So you don't know where you're at. You get out of your car. You try pushing the car, whatever it is you did, you take your glasses off. But then without putting your glasses back on, you don't walk down the road. You walk down a gravel path in the middle of the night in Podunk, Minnesota. Who does that?
Yeah, I agree.
You're going to walk down the road. And you're going to walk towards a house. Unless whoever it is that you met up at the top of the road puts a gun in your face or a knife to your throat or whatever the case may be and says, walk down there to the creek.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so he definitely was disoriented in some way.
Yeah. See, I don't see any scenario in my mind. I can't see anything that follows logic that would suggest that there's not foul play involved here.
This is also saying that his parents heard the phone fell.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, fall. They heard it fall.
Right. Well, I don't remember hearing him say they heard it fall. They just, he became unresponsive. Like, it just went silent. It was still open. Yeah. The line was still open. The call was still on, but it went silent. Then they decided that they were going to hang up and try calling him back so that he could see the phone. So they were at least smart enough to realize that the screen went black to help him find the phone. Maybe we'll hang up and call him back and it'll light up because it's ringing and that'll tell him where it's at.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. Now, all of you that are into astrology and all of you that are into that, the occult and the phases of the moon and everything, can any of you quickly look at the date of his disappearance and see if it was a full moon or if it was a half moon or a waning moon or a waxing moon or any of that? Because I'm here to tell you, if it wasn't a full moon, it was probably really fracking dark where he was. And those old cell phones from back in those days didn't have flashlights on them like they do now.
May 13th, 2008. It was a Tuesday? Okay, well, it was a waxing gibbous.
Okay, so that doesn't necessarily put off a lot of light, right?
A waxing is coming up too full. So just that could, I mean, a waxing gibbous could be anything in that 2 week period coming up to full.
Okay.
It says the illumination was 71.05%.
All right.
Okay. So he had light. It wasn't pitch black.
Yeah, I got an 80%.
Okay. Yeah, you got, I mean, there's no trees there. So if you got a moon, you could see.
Right. And it was May. So, I mean, you know, maybe there was cloud cover. Maybe there wasn't.
Right. Welcome back, Dakota. Yeah, so that was my only other thing is, you know, if you're in the woods or something like that, the moon doesn't really help you too much. But, this guy is out in the middle of, he's like standing in the 50-yard line of a football field. There's nothing. You know what I mean? So if the moon is putting off any kind of light, it's actually going to be pretty bright. You're not in the city, so you don't have, like, refractive light from all the kind of sources around you bending it. So he could probably see pretty clear. But he's still not going 7 miles in 47 minutes on foot. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. As you can see, we ran long on this episode, but there's a lot of information here. There's a lot of things that need to be discussed. There's a lot of theories and a lot of possibilities. And this is only the tip of the iceberg. Let us know what you think. Definitely get involved. If you want to hear more about this, if you want to see the results of us putting in these FOIA requests to the local law enforcement officials, by all means, let us know, communicate with us, because that's what this podcast is all about. It's all about your interactivity and you're all about what you think about these cases and how you feel. So definitely we see the possibility of a part 2 on the horizon for Brandon Swanson. Let us know what you think. Let us know how you feel. For all of my co-hosts, for Danny Lott, April Hill, Ellie Sherrill, Matt Sloniker, Dakota Bloyd, and Steph Clark, I'm your host, Kurt Dillon, saying good night. Thank you for listening. Take care. God bless, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now. How to save a life? Where did I go wrong?